Lauren Yass, your Scarlet Blue and You host and the HLGU Alumni Director. I'm coming to you from the Burt Studio on the especially fall gorgeous HLGU campus. And today's guest is Dr. Courtney James,
Hello.
Our Assistant Professor of Education. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Yay! I'm so glad you're here. Well, I'm especially excited to talk to you today because we're going to discuss something that is very dear to you. Monarch butterfly.
Yay!
And can we just give a round of applause to Abaya for adding a sound effect?
Absolutely.
We're getting so high tech here.
So good.
So good.
So good.
All right, so butterflies. How did you get involved in using butterflies to teach science?
Well, through social media, I had a friend who had started collecting monarch eggs, and she was bringing them all inside, and she would line them up on our counters, each in an individual cup, and I watched the progress all summer of her journey, and I just kept commenting on how fascinating this was, and I would watch them grow the larva into like a larger caterpillar and then into the chrysalis form, and as she released them, and I just knew this needed to be something that I needed for my life. I just knew I needed it. So then I, with all of my excitement about it, she sent me a link that BASF was sending out free milkweed to however many inquiries.
And milkweed
The milkweed is their sole source of food.
Sole source.
Right.
Not preferred.
Like, that's the one. That's what they eat. And so the monarch butterfly will only lay its eggs on the milkweed. And so when she sent me the link, I signed up. And then what do you know? But the next spring, I received those, it was like 15 like little plugs of milkweed. And I could not wait to get them into the ground so that the babies would come.
And they came.
They did. They did.
That's so cool.
Yes.
So they are really cool little creatures. They're beautiful, for one thing. They're
yes.
a beautiful butterfly. Why else is it so important to save monarchs?
Well, the monarch is endangered. According to the Center for Biological Diversity, monarchs have declined 85% over the last two decades. So, of course, there's pesticides. Mm. We mowed next to highways for like
Got rid of the milkweed.
Lots of years, which is we stopped doing that. So we're reclaiming the land. They have special things set aside for the butterflies. And so now when you drive, you see like people say, why don't they mow anymore? This is one of those reasons.
Even the
native, right? The native grasses even provide like a habitat for them to stay away from any kind of like rain or whatever. It just protects them. So, but they're also threatened by like pesticides and things. So, like when farmers are spraying their fields, like in the past, like but what they now know is that when you're planting the milkweed or when you have these pollinators around your crops, then butterflies come and they just help pollinate your crops.
Right.
So it's just
it's win-win for everyone.
It really is. Yep.
Yeah. And they travel like extreme amounts.
Yes. So you can find lots of really great visuals online that really show about this, but the monarchs that, we're releasing right now are the fourth generation monarch. So in one year, if you think about generation one, two, and three, they travel about 3,000 miles in the fall to this very special place in southern Mexico.
Oh my goodness.
And it's this unique mountain habitat that provides just the right weather conditions to raise butterflies. So then they'll overwinter there, and then in the spring, they'll start making that journey north. So Journey North is a really great resource to use also. But they breed over winter, so like they start making their way north, and then those are that that fourth generation comes north, they start laying eggs, which then becomes the first generation for next year. And then they slowly start making their way north. And so those, just think about that first generation coming north, that when those eggs are laid, they have to then wait all of the time from the caterpillar, teeny caterpillar stage all the way to the butterfly stage, then fly however north. mate, lay eggs, and do the same process. So by the time they get as far north as Canada, it's like now.
Huh.
And then they start flying back.
And then they
go to Mexico.
Do it all again.
They do it all again. It's very fascinating.
Yeah.
Yes, really.
Good word.
Mm-hmm.
And it just shows how cool our creator is to mm-hmm. make something as fragile as a butterfly to travel 3,000 miles and have one very special habitat for its winter.
But if you think also like first generation, second, third generation are all born with their reproductive organs. So they're all able to mm-hmm. have, you know, babies. But that fourth generation, the ones that we're releasing now, aren't. They are not ready.
And so that's like, nothing that man does.
God has created this creature to overwinter in Mexico. And then at the end of winter, then those things happen. So it's unbelievable that the same species changes from the first, second, third generation and the fourth cannot have babies
like
immediately.
Like a complicated little creature.
It's amazing.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
So now our students have become monarch mamas and daddies.
Yeah.
And
so
how did that happen?
It was a really great learning experience for me. It almost became my one distractor that when I was raising them, I was also writing my dissertation and I needed something in my life that I could take a break and get up and go and mm-hmm. enjoy. And so as I did this, I was realizing what a great learning experience it was for me and for my kids at home. And so I didn't know anything at all. I just knew I had these eggs and I knew I had to feed these babies and I didn't know. So I just started reading all that I could and I was like, my students need to do this. And so it's so hard to find eggs in late fall, like in August. So, and then I would get eggs and they would hatch and then I would be like, I want them to have an egg and then those would hatch. So some of them mainly got a caterpillar and they didn't always get eggs. And so I wanted them to have this experience. So too often school meant sitting and being taught.
Right.
So I'm just going to have to absorb the information around me. But I'm a boy mom, and that's not how my kids learn. My kids have to learn through opportunities and experience. And so I wanted something experiential learning for them. So every student got a habitat.
Which you brought with you.
I did. I brought it. We have one chrysalis left who probably has about four more days before it can be released. And I'm sad. I don't want it to happen. But so everyone got a habitat. Everyone got an egg or a little caterpillar or a larva. And they then got this experience. And the first time that I did it, my students were not happy with me. They were scared. They were afraid if they killed it.
You heard that 85% of them are gone. That's a lot of weight on your shoulders. Like, I'm responsible for saving the monarch.
Yes. So they were very, very, very scared. But the experience that they did led to the same excitement and curiosity that I had. And as they paraded them around campus, like, they were so proud. They were just monarch mamas. And they were very proud of those. But the overall idea was that I wanted to incorporate some sort of writing in science. And not all of us like writing. And so I wanted it to be something that they loved. And so I knew that they would form this bond with this monarch and they could write about the monarch. So they end up, after they care for the monarch and they learn all about the monarch, they end up writing this multi-genre book. And so they write descriptive, so where they describe the monarch. So it's like being the writer as an artist. So they have to be very descriptive in their writing. And we do a lot of this in class, and they bring their butterflies or their caterpillars, and we look at them and we study them. And then they write from a scientific perspective, so like expository, the factual things that we need to know about them. But then we write as a philosopher. And so that's a bit of like persuasive and why it's so important to the world that we keep habitats around, that we grow milkweed, we restore those different butterfly areas. And then they write a narrative. So as a storyteller.
Nice.
So some of them wrote from the perspective of their caterpillar. Some of them wrote from the perspective of a butterfly. And it was really fun to see their finished pieces.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And they probably do get attached. Do they name them?
They do. They all name them. We even have in our office, we usually have a couple. And so our student workers, and then any other student can come by mm-hmm. and they can check on them. They have like a nameplate that they've given to them. And they then when we release them, the students all want to come when it's time to release them. And then someone yells, "We had a baby," when the chrysalis opens up. So it really has become this like our office children.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. I love it. And is it hard to release them when it's time to go?
Well, some of them are quite fluttery. And you can tell they're like, then it's let like they're trapped in the habitat and you want them to be free.
Okay.
So what's really cool about monarchs is that they usually want to be released. Like they like to go out like in the mornings, in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. But like after a certain time, you cannot get them to leave.
Oh.
Like they're like, nope, it's going to be dark or it could be wet. If it's going to be a rain any day, they will not take off. So it's okay to keep them for an extra day or two.
Okay.
But they're typically ready to go. But it is sad. It is very sad. So
I bet.
Yeah.
I mean,
bittersweet. Parenting.
A foster monarch fail.
Correct. It is very much like parenting. You see them go, but it's really rewarding when they spread those wings and they just
take off
and fly away. And you're like, you can do it. You can do it. Yeah.
All right, so tell me about campus's response to this project.
Well, students are intrigued. Like, what do you have in that habitat?
Why are you carrying around that basket?
What is that? Right, what's in there? And so we usually, I have always said that I know if you're not an elementary education major and you want one, I would be happy to get one for you.
Oh, that's sweet.
So I typically will, and then I can even supply them with the milkweed. So I just pick some milkweed leaves. I wash the leaves very carefully. I wrap them in paper towel, put them in a Ziploc bag, stick it in the fridge, and just feed it when it's necessary.
Yeah. That's so cool. And I know I have seen videos, photos of the release days from different students and faculty and staff.
Yes.
It's just an exciting time.
It really is. Like people will be walking across campus and they will look at us and they will be like, come join us. You want to join in the release party? It's so fun.
All right. So how many butterflies do you think you've released over the past few years you've been doing this project?
I would say, and since this is only my second year doing this. So this is just this year. And this year there weren't as many as there were last year. Over the last couple of years, probably just at 100, which
that's great.
Is not very many, but it's very exciting for us as a campus.
So cool.
Yeah.
So cool. And what class do you do this project in?
This is in my elementary science methods course.
Perfect.
So they're juniors in the education program and caring for butterflies.
So great. So it's obvious that your passion is science. And in elementary world, maybe education world, they call that STEM.
Sure.
Which is what? Science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yes.
So why the passion for STEM?
Well, if you think about STEM, so many jobs these days fall into that category. But a lot of kids think, I need to grow up and be a police officer, or I need to grow up and be a doctor or a nurse or a fireman. And they don't realize all of the different jobs out there. My dad was an electrician, and so I watched him do so many things that he could fix anything around our house. He also at one time had worked like in plumbing. And so like I saw this, and then I also saw like all of the things like my own husband did, like he could do anything that he put his mind to. And so all of these things, electricians, plumbers, construction, like conservation agents and many medical fields all fall under this STEM. Mm-hmm. So STEM doesn't, it can mean so many things to kids. And I really wanted my elementary students when I taught to know that there were more job opportunities out there, such as you like hunting and fishing. You like being outside. I know you're not a great classroom learner, but maybe someday you could be a conservation agent. Mm-hmm. And here is what you need to do for that. There are also those kids who like working with their hands and they like building and designing like things with Legos and these big elaborate structures. You know, those kids can become engineers and design great things for the future. So STEM became part of like my own kids' lives growing up. And all of the things that we do and my husband's work, it just falls in that STEM field. And I wanted to know more about it. And I wanted more students to know of the opportunities that they can get. But also, like when it comes to science, I don't want people to think I'm not a scientist. I can't do science.